Messenger of the Lord. Chapter 44. The Shut Door, a Case Study. Clearer light came with the investigation of the sanctuary question. When Christ passed from the holy to the most holy of the heavenly sanctuary, the door, or ministration, of the former apartment was closed, and the door, or ministration, of the latter was opened. Christ had ended one part of his work as our intercessor, to enter upon another portion of the work, and he still presented his blood before the Father in behalf of sinners. Critics have called the shut door issue the darkest page in our denominational history, the most serious error ever taught by Sister White. On this question they have said that the battles that have been fought have not been mere exercises in academic hair-splitting. In 1885, General Conference President George I. Butler wrote, "Perhaps there has never been anything connected with the Advent movement that our enemies have tried harder to use to our reproach than the shut-door doctrine." Yet, he could say, when we understand all about the facts connected with the shut-door doctrine, as it is called, we shall find nothing of which we need to be ashamed. More than a minor footnote. The shut-door question is more than a minor footnote in the history of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. Connected with the shut-door issue is the validity of 1. The Millerite movement, especially the seventh-month message, 2. The significance of October 22, 1844, 3. The connection between the Sabbath and the sanctuary message, and 4. The relevance and integrity of Ellen G. White as a trustworthy messenger of God. Critics contend that Ellen White, even until the early 1850s, held to the extreme shut door notion. In so doing, they insist that she concurred with her husband, James, and Joseph Bates, among others, that probation had closed for all the world on October 22, 1844. Further, they point to several statements she made that suggest, in their opinion, that genuine conversion ceased on that date. The crux of their argument is this. If Ellen White was wrong about the close of probation for the wicked world on October 22, 1844, then she was wrong about what happened on that date that Jesus entered into the most holy place in the heavenly sanctuary to complete his high priestly ministry. Those who believe in the validity of Ellen White's position as to what happened on October 22 base their confidence on biblical evidence and a careful reading of the original sources, connecting disputed passages with their various contexts. This chapter will look at all source documents that relate to the shut door issue. Recognition of presuppositions. Both affirmers and critics work from presuppositions. Everybody does. No thoughtful historian or theologian would say otherwise. Presuppositions determine the questions to be asked as well as the weight given to source materials. Presuppositions too often predetermine conclusions by finding facts that support the researcher's basic paradigm. The problem, however, is that most people consider themselves objective and scientific, even while working from presuppositions, though often unconsciously. How can one arrive at truth if differences of opinion arise from a different set of presuppositions? By first asking the God of truth to guide. Then, with the help of the Holy Spirit, one should examine, 1. One's own presuppositions and 2. Those of one's opponents. It is amazing how tempers cool when adversaries recognize each other's presuppositions. Essential attitude of truth seekers. Unfortunately, people have differed regarding their understanding of God's will ever since Cain and Abel. But not even God will force love or compliance, nor will he impose his presuppositions on another. He is willing to reason with men and women regarding the soundness of his will and the validity of their presuppositions. By the weight of evidence, honest, humble people have gladly acknowledged the trustworthiness of their Creator friend. Those who choose to identify with God's plan of revealing truth must not only see His truth as a whole, but also reflect His spirit of graciousness. If not, His name is taken in vain, thus adding to the confusion, hurt, and satanic misrepresentation of His character that has prevailed for millennia. Ellen White pointed to one of the basic attitudes needed by those in the arena of opposing presuppositions. True Christian love cherished in the heart and exemplified in the life would teach us to put the best possible construction upon the course of our brethren. We should be as jealous of their reputation as of our own. If we are forever suspecting evil, this very fact will so shape their course of action as to produce the very evil which we have allowed ourselves to suspect. In this way, A great many difficulties are manufactured that otherwise would never have had birth, and brethren are often wrong by our being suspicious, free to judge their motives, and express our opinion to others in regard to their actions. That which one may be ready to construe into grave wrongs, may be no more than we ourselves are chargeable with every day. The underlying purpose of this book has been to join with the reader in searching for truth so that God's plan may be made so clear that no one will have cause to stumble. Most all historical research is limited at best. In fact, we have scanty resource material available on the Shut Door issue. We have no opportunity to ask 19th century participants what they may have meant regarding what has been recorded. Hence, one of the safest methods that fair-minded students have used to ascertain truth is to employ this basic principle. Put the best possible construction on differing points of view. In this way, a researcher's personal presuppositions are held in check. Putting the best possible construction on an opponent's point of view not only enhances friendship, but also may bring each party into a clearer understanding of the very truth each seeks. Presuppositions of critics. Because the Shut Door issue would not have arisen without the charges of certain critics, we will first review the basic presuppositions of various critics. Though not all these points apply to all critics, the general paradigm is as follows. Ellen White was time-conditioned. That is, she was a prisoner of her time, largely dependent upon the concepts prevailing among her contemporaries. For example, she reflected the Shut Door concepts of her husband and other Sabbatarian Adventists. Ellen White and church leaders have not been forthright in dealing with the first 7 or 8 years of the public ministry of Ellen White and other pioneers. Ellen White and early Adventist leaders were compelled to open the door in the early 1850s because of the growing interest in the Sabbath and sanctuary doctrines among those not involved in the 1844 experience. Ellen White's teaching on the atonement involving Christ's change of ministry into the most holy place in 1844 is unbiblical. Hence her role as a theological teacher is unacceptable. This presupposition perhaps underlies and drives all other presuppositions. If Ellen White's claim to be a divinely inspired writer is true, then her written words are either inspired or they are not. That is, from this verbal inspiration viewpoint, Ellen White would not be a prophet if she edited, deleted, or otherwise changed her previous statements. In putting the best possible construction on the critics' concerns, affirmers must role-play and think through the reasons behind the critics' charges. The quiet sharing of one another's presuppositions will often eliminate the tensions caused by misperceptions. Presuppositions of affirmers. Presuppositions of affirmers are generally as follows. Ellen White was time-related, not time-conditioned. However, on a continuum from time-related to time-conditioned, affirmers are not always at the same point. One of the weaknesses, for example, of most affirmers is that they place equal weight on both anachronistic statements and contemporary statements. Another weakness is that some affirmers have not always thoroughly studied the contemporary record. Ellen White, as all prophets, may not have fully understood all the implications of her visions at the time she received them. Through the years, affirmers have taken different positions on this point. Ellen White's position on the Shut Door, after her first visions, was different from 1. Other Shut Door advocates and 2. From her husband's or Joseph Bates's understanding, at least before 1851. Her developing clarity regarding evangelistic expansion led the Sabbatarian Adventists into their worldwide vision beginning in the early 1850s. Affirmers are convinced that Ellen White's vision messages are biblically sound and time-urgent in the setting of the messages of the 3 angels of Revelation 14. Thus, her role as theological conceptualizer, always under the biblical norm, can be safely followed. Reviewing the record. What does the historical record reveal? In probing the contemporary sources for an understanding of the term Shut Door, we will examine, in order, 1. What Millites believed regarding the Shut Door before 1844, 2. What they thought after 1844, noting that before another year would pass they would separate into 2 groups, Open Door Millites and Shut Door Millites, 3. The vision messages of Ellen White as to how she understood the meaning of the Shut Door, the close of probation, etc., and 4. The thinking of Sabbatarian Adventists prior to 1852. Millerites before 1844. Central to Millerite thinking after the 1830s was that the world would end in 1843 to 1844. The bridegroom parable, The Matthew 25 parable that included the shut door concept was often used in connection with closing events. For all millwrights prior to October 22, 1844, the shut door symbolized the close of probation, the sealing of the saints, and immediate judgment by the coming Lord. Millwrights after 1844. For a time after October 22nd, millwrights were stunned, disappointed, and confused. Soon two main groups developed, 1. Open-door millwrights and 2. Shut-door millwrights. Open-door millwrights eventually repudiated the prophetic calculations that led to October 22, 1844, and disavowed any significance to that date. Some, however, continued to believe that Christ's coming was imminent, and others continued to calculate and proclaim other dates for the visible return of Jesus. For a time, shut-door millwrights generally maintained their confidence that both their time calculations and their message of Christ's return were correct, even though they misunderstood how Christ would return. Fanaticism within shut-door millwrights. The extreme position that probation had closed for everyone on October 22, 1844, soon led many into fanaticism. This extreme group, within which were distinct variations, emphasized that Christ indeed came on October 22nd, not visually to the world but spiritually, that is, experientially, to believing millwrights who maintained their confidence in the validity of October 22nd. They were labeled spiritualizers, believing that probation had closed, thus fixing characters and destiny forever. Some leaders advocated such practices as no work. To work would indicate a lack of faith that they were in their millennial rest, creeping, even on the streets, to show their childlike humility as befitting those who belong to the kingdom of God, and eventually, spiritual wifery, thus fulfilling the biblical teaching that redeemed people will no longer be married. New view for millwrights. When Ellen Harmon described her midnight cry vision of December 1844, millwrights heard a distinctly new explanation for what happened on October 22nd, 1844. Jesus was yet to come and probation had not yet closed for everyone. When little groups in Maine and Massachusetts heard this vision story confirming their 1844 experience to be the work of God, they also listened to Ellen Harmon's rejection of their prevailing fanaticisms and theological errors. Prior to this December midnight cry vision, only a few weeks after their great disappointment, Ellen Harmon, along with many other dismayed millwrights, had concluded that they had been in error, that is, the fulfillment of the 2,300-year prophecy, the shut door of the bridegroom parable, etc., were yet future. This first vision convinced Ellen Harmon, with no hint of a general shut door for all the living on October 22, 1844, that God's people were at the beginning of new responsibilities, not at the end of all things. A few weeks later, Ellen Harmon had her second public vision, the Sanctuary Bridegroom Vision, at Exeter, Maine, February 1845. At Exeter she, no doubt, had been relating her first vision to a group of shut-door Adventists, along with reproof of their fanatical leaders and their incorrect teachings regarding their extreme shut-door positions. First connection between 1844 and Heavenly Sanctuary. The Sanctuary Bridegroom Vision gave Ellen Harmon her first look at what happened in salvation history on October 22, 1844, when Christ entered the most holy place of the heavenly sanctuary. In addition, it unfolded more clearly the principle of rejection that, in addition to those who had either rejected or repudiated the light regarding the significance of 1844, a third group existed who had not yet seen clearly the choices available at the time. Ellen Harmon described this group as careless, people who had been deceived, that is, they had not consciously rejected the light of truth, and thus the possibility remained for them to accept the light if it were properly presented to them. This third group provided the conceptual seeds for an enriched definition of the shut door. That is, the door had not been shut on those who had not consciously rejected the light brought to the world in 1844. In this vision there is no hint of a closed door for the whole world in 1844. Time of Jacob's Trouble. The Time of Jacob's Trouble vision in August 1845 saves some ardent, extreme shut-door advocates such as James White from another colossal disappointment. While Ellen Harmon was in Carver, Massachusetts, in August, James White, now 24 years of age, in nearby Fairhaven and Dartmouth, was proclaiming the imminence of the Advent, 1 year after October 22, 1844. After hearing Ellen Harmon's vision, James wrote a letter to a Shut Door periodical describing the impact of her message. Many were expecting the Lord to come at the seventh month, October, 1845. That Christ would then come, we firmly believed. Continuing in that same article, he wrote, "At this time, Ellen was with the band at Carver, Massachusetts, where she saw in vision that we should be disappointed, and that the saints must pass through the time of Jacob's trouble, which was future. Her view of Jacob's trouble was entirely new to us, as well as to herself. Christ's return near, but not imminent." Part of the newness to James was that this 1845 vision unambiguously taught that Christ's return was not imminent, that significant events would yet take place on this earth. This vision seemed to have saved James from any further time calculations regarding the Lord's return, a common practice among some Millerite leaders. This 1845 vision, so timely, so biblical, evidently made a particularly profound impact on James as well as others. This August vision, coupled with her other visions and messages, provided a context of confidence as these early believers moved into fuller light yet to come. For them, Ellen Harmon could be trusted. Their experiences in connection with young Ellen's visions became a profound basis for confidence in her prophetic ministry. Sabbath in the Sanctuary Vision. The Sabbath in the Sanctuary Vision, Halo of Glory Vision, April 3, 1847, focused on the last day significance of the seventh-day Sabbath. With each successive vision, Ellen White laid down another brick in a coherent, integrated theological foundation. In this April 3 vision, the relationship was cemented between the sanctuary and the seventh-day Sabbath, the shut door, and the Sabbath. As in preceding visions, there is no hint of an extreme shut-door position. On the contrary, Mrs. White continued to lift the sights of her colleagues, as well as her own, as she relentlessly continued to open the door of missionary responsibilities. "I saw that God had children who do not see and keep the Sabbath. They had not rejected the light upon it." Here again, she applied the principle of rejection, because the world was full of people who had not been introduced to the Sabbath truth. A vast mission field was waiting to be taught and warned. For her, the door was not shut to those, 1, who had not understood clearly the midnight cry messages, or 2, who had not yet heard the Sabbath truth. Her reasoning? The door was always open to the repenting sinner who had not rejected the clear light of truth. In a letter to Shut Door Advocate Eli Curtis, April 21, 1847, in response to his request for her views, Ellen White wrote that she, full, agreed on some points, but on others we widely differ. She agreed on 1, 2 literal resurrections, 1,000 years apart, and 2, that the new earth appears only after the wicked are raised and destroyed at the end of the 1,000 years. She disagreed with him when he took the position that Michael had stood up, Dan 12:1, in the spring of 1844, and that the time of trouble began at that time. Then she said, "The Lord has shown me in vision that Jesus rose up and shut the door and entered the Holy of Holies at the seventh month, 1844. Further, she pointed out that the time of trouble when Michael stands up was yet future and would take place only after Jesus had finished his work in the most holy place. She would elaborate on this connection in vision messages to come. In other words, she and Eli Curtis disagreed fundamentally as to what happened on October 22, 1844, because she gave the term shut door a new definition. As far as we know, this was the first time Ellen White used the term shut door in print. How did she use it? In the context of the sanctuary doctrine and specifically connected to the commencement of Christ's work in the most holy place. She would elaborate on this connection in vision messages to come. In other words, she and Eli Curtis disagreed fundamentally as to what happened on October 22, 1844. Seal of God Vision. Ellen White did not write out her Seal of God Vision, November 17 to 19, 1848. However, while she was in vision at the Otis Nichols home in Dorchester, Massachusetts, Joseph Bates took notes of what she was saying. This vision stirred the Sabbatarian Adventist group, greatly widening their vision as to their tremendous missionary responsibility to proclaim the messages of Revelation 14's three angels. This vision described the events since 1844 as light breaking out in the east, then one light after another, as each new truth was linked together, they cannot be separated. all truths that were related to the sealing work. She also assured her hearers that the time of trouble had not broken out, even though some saw a possible fulfillment in the then-current European unrest. The most dramatic part of this vision was Ellen White's emphasis on publishing the things that thou hast seen and heard, that is, the salvation implications of the Sabbath as connected to the sanctuary doctrine and the sealing work. That challenge seemed, at first, to be staggering, almost beyond belief. But the prophet had spoken. The results of the publishing venture, that is, emphasizing the Sabbath as the seal of God connected with the sanctuary truth, would be like the rising of the sun as it keeps on its course, but it never sets. The rising is in strength and grows brighter and brighter. Bates was so impressed with this vision that he asserted that the Sabbath truth should be published at once and sent to such places as France, Britain, Russia, and the Middle East. In context, this vision promise was given to a handful of people only 4 years after their greatest disappointment. Obviously, this small group of fewer than 100 Sabbatarian Adventists had no idea of a worldwide program that would develop in the next 50 years. All they knew was that God had revealed to Ellen White that they were to begin publishing, with the means available, with the light they understood. Their confidence in this 21-year-old woman had been established during the previous 3 years they would proceed. Holding the Wind's Vision. Ellen White's Holding the Wind's Vision, January 5, 1849, re-emphasized her counsel given a few weeks earlier in Dorchester that the various revolutions in Europe, both political and social, were not the time of trouble of Daniel 12, which was yet future. She concluded this informative vision with further thoughts regarding the linkage between the holding of the winds, Revelation 7, and the sealing work, by implication, the close of probation. The winds would continue to be restrained by angels until God's people were sealed, that is, the return of Jesus was contingent on, among other factors, a people prepared for the sealing of God's name, written in their foreheads. In this vision as in other messages, Ellen White emphasized that time was short, in spite of what they were beginning to understand as a delay. In the Advent, that is, the Advent is contingent on when the sealing work would be finished. Open Door Vision. In her Open Door Vision, March 24, 1849, Ellen White provided further connections in the unfolding, step-by-step process of integrating vital truths that came to be known as present truth. Linkages such as 1. Shut door, i.e., validity of 1844, with the sanctuary truth. 2. Sabbath and the sanctuary truths could not be separated. 3. Rise of spiritualism with the evils of Satan. 4. Rise of hypnotism with the evils of Satan. 5. Paul's warning about strong delusion and believe the lie applied to those ministers who were attacking the Sabbath and sanctuary truths. Here Ellen White emphasized her enriched understanding of the code word shut door, the concepts of shut door, the Sabbath, and the sanctuary truth, with its insights regarding Christ's work in the most holy place, were not to be separated. Frequently in this 1849 vision message, she described Jesus as shutting the door of the holy place so that he could open his work in the most holy place. In her graphic symbolism, one goes through the open door with Jesus after 1844 into the larger view that connects Christ's most holy place ministry, the sealing work, and the time of his second coming. The last sentence of this vision, however, has led critics to contend that Ellen White, even in 1849, held to the extreme shut-door notion that probation had closed for all the world, except those who had held on to their 1844 experience. My accompanying angel bade me look for the travail of soul for sinners as used to be. I looked, but could not see it, for the time for their salvation is past. Good interpretation connects any disputed passage with its context first, its own letter or manuscript, and then the author's contemporary documents on the same subject. Even then, perhaps, no single interpretation of these two sentences will satisfy both the affirmers and the critics. Affirmers generally find in earlier paragraphs the antecedents to the word there of this last sentence, that is, 1. To the non-Adventist pastors who have rejected the truth, 2. To those professed Adventists who had rejected present truth, 3. To new converts of the two previous ministers who appeared to have been really converted, but if their hearts could be seen, they would be as black as ever. In other words, among those involved in false reformations that went from bad to worse. There was no travail for sinners as used to be, for these false leaders and their unconverted converts, as they continued their evil course. The time for their salvation is past. Affirmers note further that Ellen White's messages for some time had been depicting, step by step, an opening door for evangelism for those who had not rejected the light of truth. The wider context for this disputed sentence, they feel, clearly explains what she did not mean. Present Truth, article. Ellen White's article in Present Truth, September 1849, provided another example of the brick-upon-brick process by which she was helping to establish the rising foundation of a coherent, integrated theology. Her key points included, 1, that God's grace is sufficient to make Christians overcomers, 2, that character determines one's future, 3, that what is done to rescue souls from the coming storm of wrath must be done before Jesus leaves the most holy place of the heavenly sanctuary, and 4, that precious souls are starving and dying for want of the present, sealing truth, the meat in due season, and that the swift messengers should speed on their way and feed the flock with the present truth. Here again we see no hint of a shut door or of a limited pool of prospects eligible for evangelism. Much to the contrary. Ellen White's cheery letter to the Hastings family, January 11, 1850, emphasized that souls are coming into the truth, and soon the work will be all done. I saw yesterday our work was not to the shepherds who have rejected the former messages, but to the honest deceived who are led astray. I saw the false shepherds would soon be fed with judgment. Let the truth come out everywhere we go. Cheer up. There are better days coming. Here again the consistent understanding that Ellen White had had since 1845 is apparent, that there seemed to be no hope for the ministers who had either rejected or repudiated the 1844 truths, but there was hope for the honest deceived. In this letter she reemphasized the principle of rejection that she reflected in her bridegroom vision of February 1845 when referring to the careless who had been deceived by Satan. When careless, deceived people are led astray, the possibility exists that they may yet be led to see the truth and break with their deceptions. Reviewing the critics' charges. For centuries, charges of inconsistencies and discrepancies have been made against the Bible. Though explanations were offered as soon as the charges surfaced, many people, because of their presuppositions, continued to believe the charges. Yet, all charges, whether against the Bible or Ellen White, must be considered carefully and with due respect. Truth can afford to be open, frank, fair and kind. Charge: Ellen White taught the extreme shut-door notion in her vision messages. This accusation includes allegations such as, 1, Ellen White believed, from her vision messages, that probation closed for everyone in 1844, believers were saved and rejectors of the Millerite preaching were lost. 2, all conversions since 1844 were spurious. Response: records show that Ellen White grew in her understanding of the shut-door concept as God continued to unfold the truths relating to the significance of October 22, 1844. These records indicate that her vision messages never taught that believers were sealed on that date. Nor did those messages teach that those who were not aware of the Millerite preaching, or those who had been honestly deceived by Satan, were lost on that date. On the contrary, the same records reveal that from her earliest visions Ellen White enriched the shut-door concept, a position in direct conflict with other shut-door Millerites. She taught that maintaining confidence in the Millerite calculations and the 1844 experience did not automatically mean that one had to believe that probation had closed for the whole world. Through her vision messages she led the way into a biblically based understanding of the events that occurred on October 22, 1844. Thus, for those who fully accepted young Ellen Harmon's early vision messages, this shut door now became the code word for validity of the 1844 message and experience, and the future opening concept of Christ's change of ministry on October 22, 1844. This expanded understanding of the October 22 events soon became present truth for Sabbatarian Adventists. Ellen White's remarks regarding conversions by false teachers would apply to all such teachers from the beginning of time. Through the centuries, many have felt saved through unnumbered plans of salvation, whether in the mysticisms of ancient Babylon and Egypt, in the emotionally powerful preaching of many revivalists, or in the ecstasies of certain charismatic groups, past or present. Others have settled into a confidence that their reason and research have given them the truth about themselves and the universe. These conversions, whether through feeling or reason, only God is able to judge as to personal motivations. But most will agree that rejecting truth is not the way to establish a saving relationship with God. Charge Ellen White and fellow Adventists have covered up her earlier, incorrect Shut Door notions. Response: at first glance, early critics had cause to ask questions words here and there were deleted from later printings. Some of the first responses to this charge from later Adventist leaders did appear to be superficial, chiefly because not many people in later years had even seen the few, and not widely distributed, documents of the 1840s. In fact, contemporary documents of the 1840s are more available today than they were to people in the 1840s. Further, no one in the 1840s could quickly access all the contemporary periodicals dealing with the Shut Door subject as a modern student can. And few in the 1840s could access the private letters of Ellen Harmon White and those of her contemporaries. Whenever one role plays, seeking to respond to the same challenges and conditions that young Ellen White faced, her responsibility to clarify earlier writings made in haste becomes clear and expected. Those few deletions or changes were not made to change positions but to clarify them so that misunderstandings could be avoided. What else would a responsible author do, even a prophet? No evidence of deception. No evidence exists that Ellen White, or anyone else, later tried to deceive her contemporaries into believing that she had not, after December 1844, taught the Shut Door notion of the Turner-Hale group. For her contemporaries, it would have been a monstrous folly. Those early Adventists had learned through experience that they could trust Ellen White. If they had observed duplicity in cover-ups, how could those same people trust her in the years to come when challenges arose that defied human wisdom? Those who had lived with her during the 1840s knew by experience how straightforward, how reliable, and timely her vision messages were from the beginning. To tamper with those vision messages would have destroyed the unity of the small group of Sabbatarian Adventists. That group would not have survived long enough to be organized, any more than the early Christian church would have survived if founders had covered up the fact that Jesus was still in the grave. Charge Ellen White and her closest colleagues demonstrated their extreme Shut Door notions from 1844 to 1852 by working only for Shut Door millwrights. As we saw earlier, the millwrights were divided into Open Door and Shut Door millwrights. Response: soon after her first vision, Ellen Harmon was instructed by the Lord to make her visions known. But to whom? The general population had already rejected the millwright message. The general Christian world had scorned the premillennial emphasis of the millwright message. The Open Door millwrights had repudiated the October 22nd date and its significance, and only the Shut Door millwrights believed that something happened on that date. In fact, the Shut Door millwrights were the most nearly right people in the world. So she started where common sense and the Spirit of God led her. Further, many in the little flock, which early Sabbatarian Adventists called themselves, still held to the extreme Shut Door positions, and Ellen continued to lead them into unfolding truth. No evidence exists that this approach to Shut Door millwrights caused a single person anywhere to be denied salvation. Why didn't more Shut Door millwrights follow her fresh insight into the significance of 1844? Only God knows. But again to roleplay, for Shut Door millwrights to follow the vision messages of Ellen Harmon would mean to believe probation had not closed for the world on October 22, 1844. Further, it would mean that those who followed Ellen Harmon's leading would, 1. Understand why Christ went into the most holy place, and 2. Link the seventh-day Sabbath with the sanctuary message. All this may have been too much commitment for many Shut Door millwrights. The additional reason why early Sabbatarian Adventists, barely 100 by 1850, did not immediately launch aggressive evangelistic programs, as they began to do in the early 1850s, was that it took time for widely scattered early believers to establish their message. That early Adventists were able to formulate within a few short years a coherent theological message that would be present truth for everyone, millwright or not, calls for admiration as well as amazement. God did not ask them to launch out before He had made them ready. Without question, Ellen White's vision messages and tenacity of spirit became the leading force in melding this small group into a world movement, all done within an amazingly short period of time. Summary. Both affirmers and critics must deal fairly with all source materials available, not merely with those that fit their paradigms and presuppositions. During 1844 and 1845, Shepdor Mirites held a fairly uniform view that probation had closed for the world on October 22, 1844. Ellen White began to use this term as a code word for what happened in heaven on October 22, 1844, when Christ shut the door to the holy place and opened the door to the last phase of his atonement in the most holy place. No source materials indicate that Ellen White or any of those who became Sabbatarian leaders engaged in the fanaticism associated with other shut door advocates. No records prove that Ellen White believed that the door of mercy was shut on anyone in 1844, except for those who shut their own door by rejecting Bible truth and only God could know those personal decisions. No records indicate that Ellen White repudiated any of her vision messages. Source materials do not indicate that Ellen White in the early 1850s changed her mind and moved from an extreme shut-door position in the early 1850s because of changing circumstances. Early Sabbatarian Adventists were moving more aggressively in reaching out to the general public in the early 1850s, chiefly because it had taken a few years to formulate their message. What would they have said to anyone regarding their reason for existing as a religious group much before 1850? All this took time. The principle of rejection emphasizes the biblical concept that A. each person is responsible for his or her own salvation. B. that no one is rejected by God until that person chooses to reject God. C. that probation will not close for the world until all have settled into a habitual pattern of accepting light or rejecting it. This principle threads its way through all of Ellen White's vision messages. Each successive vision revealed additional building material in the development of an integrated, consistent theological system that eventually became the present and distinctive truths of Seventh-day Adventists.